Now we're holding on to page 20 in Yevamos, three lines from the top, close to the end of Os Chof Dalin. The Gemara was giving different. We learned yesterday about a couple of statements of Rav Elazar about farm work. We said about farm work, about working on a farm, growing food for a living. So we said, he said that it's there's no lowlier kind of work than that. We had a couple of statements from Amiroyim that said that doing business is better than earning your living by farming. So we said, Tosfos explained, a person should have a small plot of land where he can grow food for himself and his family, but not to make a parnosa out of it, basically. So the Gemara continues, Amar Papa, Zrav Loi Tizbin. Rapapa says, though, on the other hand, when it comes to food for your own household, better that you should plant yourself rather than buy grain or whatever from the store. Afagab Dekia Dodinin, who, because even if the prices are the same, even if you figure out the cost of you raising it yourself versus buying it, it may come out that it comes out equal. Hani Mavorchi, the fact is, the ones that you grow yourself are more gedenched. So there's going to be more of a bracha in them. So Rashi explains that, first of all, Rashi explains that bracha over here means increase. When we talk about a bracha in grain, we mean that Hashem will make the derech nes that it'll increase more than you expected. And Rashi says a bracha is only found in something that you didn't buy with money, and therefore it doesn't get used up as fast. Now, Rashi doesn't elaborate on why. Rabbi Yaakov Emden points out, first of all, if you grow it yourself in Eretz Yisrael, you're taking trumas and maestras from it, which means you're doing extra mitzvahs with it. Therefore, you're getting more of a bracha. Second of all, you also have a concept that the Gemara mentions in a few places, that a bracha is found, this kind of bracha, this kind of increase, this kind of miraculous increase, is found only in things that are not measured or weighed or what have you. Meaning, because Meforshim explained, that Eivishter prefers usually to disguise Nissen in Teva. So if you don't know exactly how much grain you have, and then you find more than you expected, okay, it's a nest, but it's a hidden kind of nest. But if you measured and you found you have 10 pounds, and then you come later and you find that you have 12 pounds, then that would be an open nest, and the Eivishter generally doesn't do such things. The point being, in other words, if you buy it from the store, from the market, they measured it already. Therefore, there's going to be less of a bracha in it than if you grew it yourself, where you're not measuring it necessarily yourself. So for those reasons, you'll find more of a bracha. Rapapa continues, Zabin v'loy tidul. Another point of home economy, better that you should buy rather than, so tidul would mean, tidul, Rashi explains in Russian, dal means poor. Another gusa in the printed Gemara is tizol, which means to become poor, like the Russian zol, cheap. Like you're losing your money. Tosfos explains actually let's learn the next line of the Gemara first. Hani mili bistarki. Now that applies when we're saying that better you should buy them rather and that way you don't become poor. That on the other hand would apply to furnishings. Rashi says specifically we mean things like carpets and rugs and things like that. But when it comes to clothing, then you wear that in order to be distinguished with what you're wearing, to wear nice clothing. You may not find in the store something that's as good, so then... I had meant you should sell, not buy. Rather, you should sell. Better to sell your clay tashmishcha, your rugs and carpets and other furnishings like that, and that way you can raise money to do business. Veloy tidul, and that way you won't become poor. Veloy tizul, and that way you won't. That way they won't go down in price, and you'll get less for them. But hani mili b'starki, so that applies to things like carpets and rugs and other kinds of furnishings like that. Abu glima, but when it comes to your clothing, don't sell that. You may not find such good clothing afterwards to buy, so better that you should keep the ones that you have.
Yeah, you do find them twice as much money.
Well, that may also be. Tosfos, though, points out the problem is that if, like Rashi says, that we're talking about sell your household furnishings to raise money for business, for doing business, then why Dabka mentioned bistarki, which are things like rugs and carpets and things like that, it would apply to any furnishings. So therefore, Tosfos prefers to explain that Rabbeinu Hanan and the Aruch also explains this way. The word tidul comes from a word in Aramaic that means to weave. So it means better. So it means, according to that, zabin does mean buy. Not like Rashi says that it means sell. In Aramaic, you have the word zabin and zvin. There's two different forms of the same word that mean that one means to buy and one means to sell. So here Rashi is explaining that it means sell them. Tosfos and Rabbeinu Chananel on the Aruch are saying that it means buy. So better to buy certain things rather than making your own. Because when it comes, and then the Gemara is saying that's when it comes to rugs and things like that, don't bother making your own, just buy them ready made. But when it comes to clothing, better you should make it yourself, because you may not find something to your size, your taste, or whatever in the store. So therefore, if you're able to weave your own clothing, so much the better. Okay. Then Rapapa continues. Here's more household economy advice. And all of this is, I mean, in some places when the Gemara gives such advice, it's addressed particularly to Talmid Chachamim who are living on a very tight budget. Here he's not saying it's specifically addressed to Talmid Chachamim in general. A yid should save his money so he can use it for tzedakah and for being machanech his children and so forth rather than wasting it. So he continues, tum v'loy tashbitz. If you have a little hole in a wall, then fill it in, then fill in the hole. Rashi explains that tum is an Aramaic word meaning to fill in a hole, like we find by Yitzchak with his wells, where you have the sitmum plishtim. The plishtim stop them up, and it's translated tamunum plishtoi. So tum, close up the hole, the Lord to shap it, rather than you're going to make the hole bigger and then you're going to start renovating it by putting in new bricks and mortar and whatnot. In other words, just fix it in the cheapest way possible rather than spending a lot of extra money on making it look extra nice. Shap it, and if it comes to the point where you do need to, where you do want to, you want to make it look nice, then at least, so repair what's already there for like tivni rather than knocking down the whole wall and rebuilding it. Shakala Osik Binyan Mismaskin, because anybody who gets involved with building and spends money on it ends up becoming poor. Because building and dealing in real estate and whatever tends to consume a lot of money. We all know, you have a project in your house, you have a renovation, and it turns out to be a lot more expensive than you thought it was originally. So there's the same idea over here, do it in the most effective way, but the cheapest way, rather than that you're going to end up spending a lot of money on it, and you're going to end up becoming poor. The Meiri actually gives a different take on this Gemara. He says that the Gemara is telling us over here, Rapapa is telling us that Alderich, like you have the expressions in English, you have a stitch in time saves nine, and a pound, an ounce of prevention is worth a pound of cure. The point is, if you see a crack or a hole in your wall, don't wait until it becomes bigger and you're going to have to tear down the whole wall or a significant part of it. Fix it right away before the problem becomes bigger. And of course, it applies to Ruchnius as well. When you see a problem within yourself, work on it now before it starts taking over your homotius. Then he continues, Kvoitz Zabin Ara, when it comes to buying land, be quick to buy it. On the other hand, Mosu Nosud Itza, when it comes to getting married, then you should wait. Don't be in such a hurry about it. You want to make sure that the woman you're going to marry, that the shidduch that was proposed to you is good. She shouldn't be bad. She shouldn't be quarrelsome. So take your time as far as looking into a shidduch. Then he continues, Nechois Dagav Nosiv Itza. Also, go down a step when it comes to marrying a wife. In other words, marry a woman who's on a lower level than you, as far as it actually just says that you don't marry a wife who's more chashuva, who's more important, which would mean maybe from a richer family, from a more prominent family or whatever. The point is that she might not accept your authority in the house, so therefore go downward in order to marry a wife. The Gemara, in fact, elsewhere points out that the word chosan comes from the very word chus and nesiv, chus, which is Aramaic for go down, like the word nechus that he says over here, or nesiv and marry. So the whole idea of a chosan is that he goes down from his madrega to find a wife on a lesser madrega, and that way she'll look up to him. Beruchnius, we have the Eibush that did that with us Jewish people. We're the Kala, he's the chosan, and Hashem descended, so to speak, to take us out of Mitzrayim and to marry us by Matan Torah. So a number of interesting things in that regard. One interesting one, it's brought in Mam Lawyers, is a person tends to overestimate where they're standing in Ruchnius. So therefore, so if a person is going to marry a wife who he thinks is his equal on a ruchniistic level, it's going to turn out that she's actually higher than him, and then again, it's going to cause friction between them because then she's not going to look up to him. So therefore, if he marries below his level, then at the very least, they'll be on an equal level, or he'll be higher. But and then the Gemara mentions elsewhere, when it comes to the ruchnius of the house in general, the man should have the say in that, as opposed to when it comes to the gashmius of the house, the woman has the say. So therefore, so you want to make sure that things are correct as far as that. On the other hand, Rapopov continues, sak dago of harshu shvina. On the other hand, when it comes to choosing a good friend, a shushvin means more than stam a friend. A shushvin means a really dear friend. And in fact, in Daf Yomi a couple of days ago, there was a sugya on the topic of shushvinus. There was a concept back then. That when a person got married, his friends, his shushvinin, would help with gifts that would go towards the cost of the wedding. And the expectation was later on, when each of them gets married in turn, then all the friends will reciprocate in the same way. So there's a whole system there called Shushvinus. So it was like a mutual aid society, but all composed of good friends. So the word Shushvin means a really good friend. So when it comes to that kind of person, go up a level and choose that. Go find a chosh of a person to be friendly with, and that way you'll learn from him, and that way some of his chashivus will rub off on you and so forth. Ben Yehoyada mentions in this connection an interesting point. After Shaul and Yehonasan were killed in battle, and we know Yehonasan was David's close friend, and Yehonasan had saved David from being killed several times, so David said a whole long kina, a whole long sad poem over the deaths of Shaul and Yehonasan. And the last couple of psukim, he focuses on Yehonasan. You were such a good friend to me. He says, "Nifla'ata havos kali ma'avas noshin. Your love was more wondrous. Your love towards me was more wondrous than the love that men and women have for each other." So why is that? So Ben Yehoyada says, based on this Gemara over here, here David is lower than Yehonasan because he's a commoner and Yehonasan is the crown prince. And yet Yehonasan acted more like you would act when you're taking a wife, as we're saying over here, go down a level, rather than what we're saying when you're choosing a friend to go up a level. And therefore, so David can say, you acted in an amazing way, the kind that people wouldn't normally do when they're choosing best friends. And instead you did as though we're talking about him as though a chassan would do when he's choosing a kala. Okay.
Friendship can last forever.
Friendship can last forever, yes. Okay, the Gemara continues. Omer of Elazar ben Avina. We learned yesterday, actually, this relates to a point that we learned yesterday. We said that the Nivrucho v'chol kamesh b'chos ha'adama, and these Baruchu v'zarecha kol ge'yei ha'aretz, we said that everybody in the world is benched for the sake of the Jewish people. We said even ships that go in faraway places where there are next to no Jews, or even Goyish nations who live in caves, who live as completely uncivilized people, they're benched only for the sake of the Jewish people. So now the Gemara brings something else related to that point. Omer of Elazar ben Avina, ein puronus bala olam ela b'shvil Yisrael. Punishment comes to the world only for the sake of the Jewish people. That this way, in other words, Rashi says, that this way, in order to scare us Jewish people, so we should do tshuva. So in other words, Parshat means when you see in the headline that there was a flood, there was a typhoon in this place, there was an earthquake in that place, and whatever, and we just kind of shrug our shoulders and say, okay, you know, that's the way it is, or we talk about what should American policy be towards that place or whatever. But here, Rebbe Lozer wants us to know the real reason is to realize that Eibishter is giving it as a warning rather than punishing us Jewish people. He brings it to the Goyim so that we should see what's going on and do tshuva.
The war in Israel, same thing?
The war in Israel involves our fellow Jews, so that's different, but that's something else. But yeah. Shenamar, I mean, more generally, you can say everything comes for the sake of the Jewish people, but we're saying even when it affects Goyish nations, where it seems that we have no connection with them, nonetheless, it's Bishvil Yisrael, so that we should learn from it to do tshuva. Shenamar, as the Pasuk says, the Novi says in Hashem's name, Hichrati Goyim, I've cut off nations, Nashamu Pinoy, some have made their corners, meaning their high places desolate, Hechravti Chutzoy, some I've destroyed their marketplaces, Uchtiv, and the next pasuk continues, Amarti, Hashem says, I have thought, Ach tiri oisi tikhi musar. Because of that, now you will fear me and you will take musar. You'll realize, in other words, how Hashem runs the world. Marsha points out the psukim before that in the Novi Tzfanya are talking about the sins of the Jewish people in Yerushalayim. So now Hashem is saying, instead of punishing you directly, people of Yerushalayim, people of Eretz Yisrael, I chose to first bring out the punishment on the goyim in hopes that that would be enough to get you to sit up and take notice. There's a number of points in this. So the Maharal makes a point, actually. We know Ein Ra Yirin Milamayla, that the Eivishter doesn't, that everything that comes from the Eivishter is good. Therefore, that's what the Gemara is saying over here. When we see that a Goyish nation is punished, essentially it's not so much for them themselves, it's not so much for them to do tshuva, because most of the Goyish nations are not really prone to doing tshuva. Once in a while, you have like Ninveh, but in general, if they have these kinds of disasters happen, they're more likely to complain against Hashem. So it's not for their, it's not to get them to do tshuva. It's not even just for the purpose of destroying them, because Hashem has other ways of doing that. It's rather, that's what we're saying over here, is it's meant as goodness for us, Jewish people, to learn from it a lesson and do tshuva. There is also an explanation. Eyun Yaakov mentions something along these lines, or Bahanan Wasserman expands on it, that the Gemara is using the expression over here, pur onus. Now, pur onus is in the Lashon peroin, as in paying back. So in other words, sometimes there comes a point when the Eivishter decides that a certain nation, that's it. It's their time is up. It's time for them to be destroyed and scattered to the winds. That's not what we're talking about over here. We're talking about there can be times when the Eivishter decides, you know what, a Goyish nation has done enough Averis that they deserve a certain amount of punishment. Not to be wiped out completely, but at least that they're gonna suffer something. That we're saying is not so much for their sake, but for our sake. Because otherwise, if it was just for their sake, the Eivishter would have waited until it's completely full up, until their measure of Averis is completely full up, and then that's it, they'd be goners. Getting back to, getting back to matters involving husbands and wives, the Gemara says, Rav have a mifter meir priya. Rav was one time taking leave of Rav Chiya. And Rav Chiya was Rav's Rebbe. He was also Rav's uncle, double uncle, in fact, because he was Rav's uncle both from his father's side and from his mother's side. The Gemara explains in Tzachim and in Moed Katan, the family tree over there. Anyway, so Rav was taking leave of Rav Chiya. Omale, so Rav Chiya gave him a bracha. Rachmana litzloch mimidi dikoshe mimoisa. May Hashem save you from something that's even worse than death. So Rav was wondering to himself, how could there be anything worse than death? Nofak, so he went out, Doc, he checked into it, but Ashkach, and sure enough, he found a pasuk that expresses that this idea, where Shlomo HaMelech says, Moitzani mar mimoves esa isha. I find even more bitter than death is a wife that a husband doesn't get along with. An Isha Ra who causes trouble for her husband to the point that he says, you know, I'd be better off dead. Why is Rav Chiya saying it in such a mysterious way? Why doesn't he say openly that Hashem should save you from an Isha Ra? So a couple of them first point out that this may have been after Rav was already married. And the Gemara is going to point out in the next few lines that Rav's, unfortunately, the bracha didn't come true and Rav's wife was Taka and Isha Ra. She did cause him a lot of heartache. So therefore, so Rav Chiya, apparently this was in Rav's house, or at least Rav's wife was somewhere nearby. So Rav Chiya doesn't want to say it openly because Rav's wife overhears, then Rav is going to be in worse trouble. So therefore, he said it in this disguised way and left it to Rav to figure out what he's talking about. So the Gemara says, in fact, Rav Havakumatsharele Dvesu. So Rav's wife used to cause him trouble. For example, Ki Omalah Ividili Tloifri, if he would ask her to make him lentils for dinner, of the Chimsi, then instead Bedavka, she would make a different kind of chimsi as a different kind of beans. Maybe it's related to hummus, in which case it would be chickpeas, maybe it's some other kind, whatever, the opposite of what he wanted. Chimsi, and if he asked for chimsi, avdele tloifchi, then dafka she would make for him lentils. So this was just one example of where she would do the opposite of what he wanted. Ion Yaakov points out, by the way, either way, it's very cheap food because Rav was mindful of the fact that the Gemara explains elsewhere that a person should eat. He has to eat nutritious food, of course, but he shouldn't splurge on food. He should eat whatever food is cheapest and nutritious. So therefore, so he's willing to live on lentils or chinti or whatever rather than more fancy food. Anyway, Ki Godo Chiyabre, when Rav's son Chia was older, he realized what's going on. So Apichla, so he started switching it around. So Rav would tell his son Chia, go please and tell your mother that I want lentils for dinner. And instead, Chia, being smart, would switch it around, knowing that his mother was going to switch it around. So he would tell his mother that Tati wants chimsi for dinner. And so she would, being a salachas, and she would go and make the lentils. So it turns out that Rav would get, after all, what he wanted. Omalei, so after a while, Rav says to his son, Yi'al yalach imach, apparently your mother has improved a lot. Now she's doing what I want. Omalei, so the Chia tells him, Anohu. Actually, it was Anohu d'ka pichnala. No, it's because I was switching things around. Omalei, so Rav says, you know, in a way it's a good thing. Hainu de Kamri Inshi, this is like people have the expression, the Nofik Minoch, the one who comes from you, your own son, Taima Malpach, he teaches you a good idea. Sometimes a son can make his father smarter. He gives him a good idea that he himself never thought of. But he says, Mihu Aklo Savin Hochi, but you should not continue doing that. Shenema, because the pasuk says, "Lindu l'shonam daber sheker." The Navi criticizes the Jewish people of his times. They've taught their tongues to speak lies. Ha'avenilu, they've worn themselves out doing crooked things. Which means, in other words, Marashah says, so you have a person gets used to lying after a while, like they don't even know how to tell the truth anymore. Lying comes more naturally to them. So therefore, Rav tells Chia, better don't do that. Don't get yourself used to lying. So Rav himself now can use this method. It's a good idea. Rav is saying, from now on, I'll use this method. I'll tell her that I want A, and this way she'll make B, and B is what I really wanted after all. But not that, for me, that wouldn't be a problem, because for me, that wouldn't be lying. I could eat either one after all, but for you, it would be. Ben Yehoyada, I think it is, asks, so why did Chia tell Rav what he was doing in the first place? Why doesn't he just say, you're right, Taka, mommy has now gotten a lot better. He says because he was concerned what happens if Rav truly thinks that his wife now is more willing to do what he wants. He may at some point entrust her with a secret or something, and then it's going to get out when he doesn't want it to. So therefore, Chia figured that he has to tell Rav what's actually going on over here. Well, the Gemara says also, Rav Chia have a kometzar le'dvesu. Rav Chia also, not this is not Chia, the son of Rav, this is Rav Chia that we just had before, the one who gave Rav the bracha. Anyway, so he also have a kometzar le'dvesu. His wife also used to harass him. Nevertheless, ki have a mashkach midi, but when Rav Chia would find something that he figured his wife would like, he would wrap it up in his sudr, in his scarf, or in his turban, or maisila, and he would bring it to her. What's the point about he would wrap it up in his sudr? But Pashtos is saying, like, he wrap up a gift. Ben Yehoyada makes the point, though, a sudr is usually, that we find in other Gemaras, is the kind of thing that a Talmid Chacham usually would wear. It was a type of turban that generally only Talmid Chachamim wore. So by him wrapping it up in his sudr, he was hinting at, why is it good to give her gifts? I appreciate her because she helps me, she helps around the house, as the Gemara is going to say, and she makes me able to learn Torah, and therefore she shares in the schus of the Torah that I'm learning, represented by my sudr. So Omalei Rav v'hokametzarele lamar. So Rav asks, why are you doing that? Doesn't she harass you? She's making life difficult for you. Now, why is Rav asking the question? Was he trying to cause friction between more friction between Rav Chia and his wife? So Ion Yaakov says one thing is because he's figuring, because then she's going to figure, you know what I'm doing is good, and she's going to continue doing it. Maybe if you don't give her these little trinkets and gifts, maybe she'll realize that she needs to shape up. So why are you confirming her that what she's doing is right?
So the gifts were help that she should have become good.
Well, maybe that was what Rav Chia hoped. But the point is, Rav is saying the fact is that it may backfire. So why are you doing that?
It may backfire, she's still.
She may figure that, and you know what I'm doing is good. I may as well continue what I'm doing. You know what? It should be enough for us that our wives raise our children and they save us from chet, because otherwise we would have hiru avera. We'd always have thoughts of znus. We'd even maybe come to hotzas zerel avatola. So if nothing else, having a wife helps with those kinds of things. And for that, he says, I have reason to be grateful for her, even if I'm not always getting along with her so much. There's a musadik of work on this, by the way. You think about it, the Megadlis Vanenu is something that takes a tremendous amount of effort, whereas Matzilus Yisonim and Achet is not. And nevertheless, Reb Chiya is putting them on an equal level, in the sense he's saying, she puts more effort into one than the other. But from my point of view, I have reason to be equally grateful for both, because to me, both, each one of them is a big thing in itself.
When is this year?
He's raising his children, Pashat, as mothers usually do, yeah. Okay. Further on, the Gemara tells, Makri le Rabbi Yehuda le Rabbi Yitzchak Brei. One time Rabbi Yehuda was reading and explaining to Rabbi Yitzchak, his son, the pasuk that we quoted before, Motzani Mami Mavas Seisha, that Shlomo says, I find a certain kind of woman more bitter than death. Omalei, so Rabbi Yitzchak asks him, Gein Man, who is an example of the kind of woman that Shlomo is talking about. Omalei, Gein Imcha. So Rabbi Yehuda says, for example, your mother. Now, how could he say such a thing? Isn't it brazen lashon hara? The Chofetz Chaim gives an explanation that basically it's something that was already known. The Gemara in Erechin explains that it's something that's well known, that it's not so much an issue of lashon hara, and to a certain extent it's for Te'elas, because it helps understand the meaning of the pasuk. However, the Gemara asks, Eini, is that so? So you're telling me that Rabbi Yehuda and his wife were not getting along, and he considers her more bitter than. But there was another time Rabbi Yehuda was teaching his son, the same Rabbi Yitzchak, was teaching him the following Maimon Chazal. Ein Adam Motze Koras Ruach Ela Me'ishter Rishoina. A man finds real satisfaction, real mental satisfaction, only with his first wife. Meaning, you can have a person who his wife passed away or divorced or whatever, and he remarries, but only his first wife, generally speaking, is his actual basherta, is the one who's the other half of his neshama. So therefore, he really finds only true nachas ruach only with her. Shenema, as the pasuk says, Yehi mekor chaboruch, your fountain should be blessed, usmach me'eshes nurecha, and rejoice and be happy with the wife of your youth. Marshab refers over here to something he explains on this Gemara is also in Sanhedrin, where he explains the word makurcha is also related to the word koras, as in koras ruach, as Rabbi Yehuda is saying. So v'omalek goin man, and Rabbi Yitzchak asks him, give me an example of such a harmonious relationship, and he answers, goin imcha, for example, your mother. So what is it? Is Rabbi Yitzchak's mother, Rabbi Yehuda's wife, marmi mavis, or is Rabbi Yehuda having koras ruach, satisfaction with her? The answer is Mitkat Takifa. She was the kind to get very easily angry. Va'aburi me'abra b'mila, but on the other hand, she would also calm down very easily. So therefore, so in one sense, it's hard to live with such a person because she can blow up at any time. But on the other hand, when she does, then it's soon afterwards that she calms down and everything is good again. In fact, you have in Pirkei Avos, you have in Parakei, where you have all the different, you have the Mishnah over there, Arba Midas, there are four different types of Midas that a person has as far as anger and then calming down. And you have the Mishnah mentions over there, Maher Lichos, Maher Noyach Lichos, so if he gets angry easily and he calms down easily. You actually have different girsos of the Mishnah over there. The printed Mishnayos have, and the Bar Pinuda says this is the correct girsa, is that the Mishnah says, Yotza Schore Behefseda. Yes, he gains from the fact that he calms down easily, but it's more than outweighed by the loss because of the fact that he gets angry so easily, and anger is a very bad midah. On the other hand, the Alter Rebbe in the Siddur has the girsa the other way. The Bar Pinuda brings, there is such a girsa the other way around, although he doesn't like it, but the Alter Rebbe Taka brings the girsa in his Siddur the other way around, that yotze hefseide b'schorei. Yes, such a person loses out, but it's more than gain. It's more than outweighed by the gain, by the fact that he calms down more easily.
When you're angry, so, the shekina leaves you, and also it's like a vayda zara.
Right, but so therefore, so that's why you have the different girsos. But it comes out over here based on what the Gemara is saying over here. Maybe a smach for what they offered out. That is the girsa over there, because Rabbi Yehuda is saying, as bad as it is that she gets angry easily, on the other hand, the fact that she calms down easily means that I have koras ruach with her. Actually, Ben Yehoyada has an even more interesting explanation on it. Look, again, in the Gemara in Sanhedrin, where this Gemara is also brought. He says what Rabbi Yehuda is saying to Rabbi Yitzchak is, your mother has a naturally very, very sharp temper. But over the years, she's worked on it, and she's transformed it, and now she's a calmer person. So therefore, originally, she would have been Mari Mavis. But now that she's worked on herself all these years, then I have Kodas Ruach with her. Anyway. So the Gemara, this is Ben Yehoyada explains this. He says that it's not that now she gets angry easily and she calms down easily, but rather in the past she used to get angry very easily, but over the years she's worked on herself where now she's forgiving. So the Gemara said in that case, also that would also explain, that would also neatly explain the first question, how could he say Kigoin Imcha about a Moitza and Imami Mavis, wouldn't that be Lashon Hara? On the contrary, it's pointing out, look how much a person can transform themselves. And it's no small thing, by the way. There's a famous thing that's brought, I think from Rabbi Yisrael Salanter, who says it's easier to learn through the whole Shas than it is for a person to change one single midah of herself, of themselves. So if we're talking about, as Ben Yehoyada says, that Rabbi Yehuda's wife, Taka, changed this midah of hers, then that's a tremendous accomplishment.
Is it a
hira
that you tell your kids how you feel about your wife?
Is it a hira? I mean, maybe when necessary. I mean, in this case, the Chofetz Chaim points out in Hilchos Lashon Hara. I mean, look, Rabbi Yitzchok knew what the relationship is between Rabbi Yehuda and his wife. So it's not like there's no Lashon Hara involved.
Maybe if the ending is good.
Maybe if the ending is good, yeah. Okay. Heichidomi Isha Ra. Now we're talking about over here in this sugya, we're talking about an Isha Ra, a bad woman. Now, what does that mean? What is she actually doing? Because are we Sam talking about that a couple doesn't get along? Not always is it going to be her fault, Kiyadua. In fact, there's a Truva of Rashi. There's a Truva of Rashi where there's a couple that were going through a very bitter divorce, and the husband was claiming all kinds of things against his wife as far as mumim and all kinds of other things, and Rashi takes a very hard line on it in the Truva. And he says this guy's not acting like a Ben Yisrael should to his wife, and so forth. And Rashi uses a sharp expression over there. He says if the guy would put in as much effort into finding something good in his wife as he does into finding reasons to quarrel with her, then already he would have found, she would have found chein be'enav. He would have already found her to be graceful and beautiful.
I think most of the stories are the wife is antagonizing the husband.
Well, that's what we're assuming, but that's what we have to figure out. So that's the question. What exactly?
The stories in the Gemara is,
yeah,
she's the...
That seems like she's the antagonist. Yeah, so the Gemara is now going to define that more precisely. So my Heichidomi Ishara, Amar Abaya, Mekashtalei Taka or Mekashtalei Puma. She dresses up and sets a nice table for him, but then she also, so to speak, dresses up her mouth. In other words, she starts cursing him out and then saying all kinds of insulting things to him together with the meal. So like on the one hand, she's doing a chesed for him and making him a nice meal, but on the other hand, then he has to listen to all kinds of insults and everything goes together with it.
How did he answer with the hope that she was doing? He asked her, where'd you park your broomstick?
Never done. Yeah. Anyway, Anaf Yosef actually points out that, you know, when you get down to it, if at least she wasn't serving him food, then it wouldn't be so bad. But when he's, you know, if she's making him a nice dinner, but then together with it goes this, then it feels in a way a lot worse. Then Yehoyada also makes a point. He says, you know, she might be daft to do that because she figures, listen, if she doesn't feed her husband at all, okay, he's going to have to go out and eat at a restaurant or something like this. She won't have the opportunity then to yell at him and curse him out and whatever. So therefore, she daft to figures. She'll make him food in order that. Rava Amar Makash Le Taka or Mahadra Le Gaba. Rava says, it can also be she makes him a nice, she sets him a nice table, but then she turns her back to him as if like, I don't want to eat with you. I don't want to have anything to do with you. So that would also be, Marsha points out that, it's derech leitzonus. It's either of these things, whether she's cursing him out or whether she's just ignoring him, either way, it's derech leitzonus. It's acting in a way, it's not acting in a way, taking her marriage seriously, basically. Leitzonus is all about where you take something that's supposed to be serious and you make one big joke out of it. So now she's doing that. There are some Mephoshim, actually, who explain, interestingly, that this Mekashtalei Taka may also be a euphemism for getting ready to have relations. We find in some places in the Gemara where having relations is compared to setting a table. The Gemara in Nedarim, for example, we'll get to in a few months, Bez Hashem. So that being the case then, so what Abaya and Rava respectively are saying is she makes it seem like she's interested in Tashmish, and then she demonstrates with her words or with her actions that she's not, and that causes them a tremendous hardship. So that would be, those would be examples of Isha Ra. So the Gemara continues. Amar Rav Chama bar Chanina, Kivin shenasa adam isha, when a man gets married to a woman, avinoisav mispakakin, his averis get closed and sealed off. Mispakakin, now he says malashim poikakin, like sealing up, like closing up holes. So Shenemar, the pasuk says, "Motza isha, motza tov." He's found a wife. He's found good. By yofek rotzen mehashem, and he brings out favor from Hashem. And the Gemara is dashing by yofek as meloshin poikik and meloshin sealing up. A couple of them first deal with the issue, why is the expression sealing up? Why not to say, is Averis are forgiven? You do, in fact, have a medrash that says that when a man gets married, is Averis are forgiven. One of the sources we learn it from, and it's in fact by Esav, no less, that one of his wives is called Machlas, the Machlas Bas Yishmael, because Shenimchalo Avinoisav, because Averis are forgiven when he got married to her. So why are we using the expression poikikin? So one point that a couple of them first make is that we're saying, So they were saying that the Averis are not completely gone. They're kind of like hidden away depending on how things work out. If Hitaka treats his wife the way he's supposed to and acts like a Jewish husband is supposed to, then those Averis will be kept away. But if not, then if he doesn't make the most of the opportunity of marriage, then those Averis are going to come back, and then we can say like the cover is opened up again and they come right back out. H. Yosef also makes the point like this: without a wife, a man is susceptible to tumas keri, to becoming a bal keri. So like this, in other words, now when that's closed off, now that avenue for the klippus is closed off when he's married, because now he has an outlet with his wife Batara. And the Gemara continues, B'mar Rava, in the West, meaning in Eretz Yisrael, Ki Nosev Inish Itza, when a man would get married, Amri Lehochi, they would ask him, Motza or Moitze. So what's your marriage like? Is it Motza or Moitze? And those are both reflected in Sukkim. Motza Dichtiv, Motza Isha, Motza Toiv. The Pasuk says, as we quoted before, one who found a wife has found good. So is your marriage like that, you've found, or is it Motza Dichtiv, the Pasuk that we quoted before, Motza Ani Marmi Mavas Esa Isha. Now, what are they asking him by that? So there are a number of different points in it. Marshall makes the point that that he's motza, he found, as if like he found a mitzia, so that would refer to a good wife, like you find a mitzia, you find an unexpected treasure. As opposed to the motza ni ma'ami mavas, then would refer to an isha ra, like we're saying that she feels herself that she can dominate over him. Marshall brings in this connection. You have gematrios involved over here. When you have motza isha, so the word isha has a gematria a few less than ish, showing, in other words, that she recognizes that he's the master of the household, and she respects him and looks up to him. On the other hand, ha isha with a hey has the same gematria as ish, and therefore it represents where she feels herself equal to him, and therefore that she can even lord it over him. So then that's a problem. Isha with a aleph shin hey is less than ish, but ha isha is the same gematria. So that's why it says moitzani mamimavah says ha isha, implying in other words that she feels herself equal to him. Yeah, by the way, that Amnon mentioned in Hilchos Ishus that a wife should consider her husband kamo sarei melech, like a prince or a king, and what he says goes. And on the other hand, he should, as we learned previously in the Gemara, he honors her kigufa, and he loves her kigufa, like his own guf, and honors her and respects her even more than his guf. So then the Amnon describes in Hilchos Ishus, then you have a marriage vizidavt zayin. Anyway, there are a number of Mephoshim who explain. Now, the question is, we're saying when the guy got married. So what, as soon as he got married, he's supposed to know whether it's Motza or Motza? What kind of a thing is that? And also, isn't there an issue of Lashon Hara? Again, if he's going to say Motza, isn't that Lashon Hara about his wife? So a number of the Mephoshim explain that they're not asking him, how are things going so far? They're telling him, you should realize you have two choices ahead of you now. You can live your marriage in the Motza way or in the Motza way. And depending on that is how you're going to experience things, whether you're going to have a good marriage or chas v'shalom the opposite. So moitza means fine, but it means in present tense. Yeah, it means that moitzani, I find. With that said, though, you're mentioning taken out. There is an interesting thing that Rabbi Akiva Eger brings, that in his town, he was the Rav in Posen for many years. He mentions in that town there was a minhag by a chasana, the chasim, and they come moitzi, and then they would right away grab the bread away from him. So why? He says, because based on this, because you want to take away from him the moitza. I once saw a vote on it also, I don't remember the source of it, that one meaning of it is also, Mutsa is in past tense. So in other words, we're saying, when a man gets married, and he knows, that's it, it's a done deal, I married, I found my basherta, I know this is the one for me, then good, things are going to be wonderful, Mutsa isha Mutsa type. But Moitze, if he's in present tense, if he's always second guessing, was this really the one, could I have gotten somebody better or whatever, then it's going to be, yeah. Yeah. Okay. Yom Yom Mashiach Ge'ola. Yud Zayin Cheshvan. We have three times we have all the promises in Tanakh and Ma'amar Razal about what's going to happen La'asid Lavoi, and really we have three different periods. You have Yemosa Mashiach, you have Gan Eden, and then you have the world after Tchias HaMesim. When it comes to Yemosa Mashiach, so you have the famous two opinions in the Gemara. Is it going to be a time of complete Nisim, or you have the opinion of Shmuel that Ein Ben Olam Azeli Yemosa Mashiach El Shibud Malchus Bilvad, that nature will still run as we're familiar with it, and the only difference is we won't be subjugated to the Goyim. So that means, according to both opinions, in Yemosa Mashiach, there's still going to be eating and drinking. We see that in many Psukim and Ma'amar Razal. We see it explicitly in the Rambam. Then you get to the other two phases, which we'll learn about tomorrow, Be'ez Hashem, in those, there's not necessarily Achila or Shtia. Okay, continuing of halachas and of animals and pets and whatnot on Shabbos. So we talked about yesterday about feeding them, where you have certain things you have to be careful of in terms of feeding them on Shabbos. B'chlal, though, you're only allowed to feed animals that mizanois in alecha, where they depend on you for their food. So your own pets, for example, your farm animals or what have you, but not, let's say, for example, cats or dogs or whatever in the street, or even certain kind of animals that do belong to you, but they go and forage for their own food, those also you can't. So there are exceptions. For example, he mentions over here, based on a Gemara, that when it comes to a dog, even a hefker dog, there was a mitzvah to give him a little bit of mizonis. We see the Eibishter has rachmanis on him and makes that a dog has a very long digestive cycle because they don't get much food. So therefore, the Eibishter makes that their food stays in their stomach for 3 days. So you should have a certain rachmanis on a dog. But in general, we say hefker animals not. And one thing is, when it comes to Shabbos Shira, you put out kasher or whatever for the birds, you have to put it out before Shabbos, because otherwise on Shabbos itself you can't, because those birds, ain mizanois in alecha, they don't depend on you for food. They go and forage for scraps in the street. In that connection also, though, you do have a din that if you're allowed to invite a goy for a meal on Shabbos, Yom Tov not, because it's a concern, Shema Yagra B'Shvilo, you might cook extra for him, but Shabbos you can't cook anyway, so you are allowed to, and in fact, but there is, after all, we say, Mefarnes in Ani Goyim, Amani Yisrael, you do have a mitzvah, Medrabanan, to help the goyish poor together with the Jewish poor, so he can be considered Mezanois in Alacha, and furthermore, also, if you give him food, and he wants to take it outside, not a problem. You're not chayev to make sure that he doesn't carry on Shabbos, after all. So if he carries out the leftovers, then there's no problem with that.
Where's your leftovers?
If there's leftovers and the goy is taking them with him home, then that's not a problem.